Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Amy McCready. I'm the founder of Positive Parenting Solutions and the author of If I Have to Tell You One More Time. I'm so thrilled that you all joined us tonight. This is a teleseminar by phone. It's not a video webinar, as a lot of you are used to with me, but I am so excited about what we'll just go ahead and get started. One of the things that I wanted to tell you is that by the age of 5, most children in America are going to take some kind of intelligence test. So whether your child is going to a private school or a public school, maybe a gifted program or a regular classroom, one of the most important tests they'll take comes way before the SATs. And public school parents tend to think that their kids are immune from early testing, but that's actually not the case at all. For kids who are starting public kindergarten, they're immediately tested and placed into groups, either advanced, average, or slow in terms of their ability. And what is so concerning is that a child who is pegged as slow in the first grade has less than a 13% chance of catching up. So these tests, you know, obviously are so important to our kids' future, yet as parents, we have no idea what's covered. And so kind of these, what's covered on the test is really like the most closely guarded secret in education, and that's why we brought the group from the Testing Mom here tonight. And I am so excited. I want you to get a pad of paper and a pen because you're going to be taking a lot of notes tonight. Some of the things that you're going to learn are the 7 abilities that every child needs for school success and how you can build on each one of those at home in just the course of everyday life. You're going to learn the 5 most effective ways to raise your child's IQ and how to impact your child's IQ by 38 points. And there's a few other IQ surprises built in, too. And most importantly, how to prepare for testing without stressing your kids out and without stressing you out. So I want to introduce my guests who are going to make that happen tonight. These are seriously 2 of the smartest people that I know. Karen Quinn and Michael McCurdy are the founders of the popular website testingmom.com. A lot of you may already be familiar with it. So I'll tell you about Michael and Karen. Michael became interested in testing when he moved from Texas to New York City, and his daughter, who's 7 now, she was tested and admitted into the New York City Gifted and Talented program. But he quickly realized that there was absolutely no information available for parents who had kids going through that gifted and talented school selection process. So he founded a company called New York City Gifted and Talented to help parents learn what to expect when their kids were going through that process. And Karen Quinn, her son was actually headed for special education when he went through his testing, until she actually sort of cracked the code for early intelligence testing, and she was able to boost his score from the 37th percentile to the 94th percentile, which that sounds amazing to me. And then she started a company in New York City in 2001 to help parents navigate that admissions process and get their kids ready for testing. She's written a number of books, among them Testing for Kindergarten, and then she later teamed up with Michael to start testingmom.com. So what they do is help parents get kindergartners through 6th grade ready for tests they're going to have to take in public school, private school, and gifted and talented admission programs. So I want to thank Michael and Karen for being here tonight. Thanks for sharing this information with all of us, and I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
All right, great. Thank you, Amy. Appreciate the introduction.
Thanks, Amy.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael McCurdy. It's really great to be here tonight. And again, if you have any questions for Karen while we do the teleseminar tonight, please go to our Facebook fan page, Testing Mom on Facebook, and we will be monitoring the questions out there, and Karen will address those questions as we have time, maybe toward the end of the teleseminar tonight. The way the teleseminar tonight is going to work is I will be asking Karen a series of questions, and she will give her expert insights on each of those. And let's go ahead and begin, Karen. All right?
Great.
Karen, the first question is, you're an expert, you're a parent expert, and you're not a PhD in educational psychology. So how exactly did you get involved in testing for young children?
Well, this is kind of my story. It's, you know, you had your story in terms of what got you interested, and it was kind of what Amy was saying, which is, I have a son who, when he was about 3 years old, I realized that he was not developing the way that, that his sister had. And I thought there was something wrong. I didn't know what was wrong with him, but he wasn't developing language. He wasn't looking at me when I talked to him, and I was, in fact, very concerned that he might be autistic. I didn't know what was going on. And I had him evaluated, and the doctor said to me, you know, I have good news and bad news. And the good news is that the reason that Sam is not developing the way he should is because he can't hear. But we can fix that with surgery. And he said the bad news is that we tested him. We gave him what's called the WPSI, which is an IQ test. And he said, "This, your son scored in the 37th percentile. He will never be able to function in a regular classroom." And so I was told to start getting prepared to find the right special ed program for him. And so I went to my mother. My mother happens to be a PhD in early childhood development. And I asked her, I said, "Is this true? You know, is he going to have to be in special ed?" And my mom said, "No, that's not necessarily true. He's very young. You can really work with him." And so we got his ears fixed and his hearing came back. And with my mother's help, I started working with him every day for about half an hour. And I worked on all the different abilities that she directed me to work on at that time, abilities he would need for school success and for testing success. And a year later, he was given the same test, and he ended up scoring in the 94th percentile. And in fact, he got into a wonderful private school in New York City, and he was a good student for his whole life. So, you know, it turned out to be just, everything turned out to be just fine, but it was because I worked with him. And that's how I learned that you can work with a child and you can really make a difference on their IQ and on their abilities.
Okay, great. Karen, in your book, which is an amazing book, called Testing for Kindergarten, and as you know, it focuses on the seven abilities children need for testing and also school success. How did you come up with and identify these abilities that you have in your book called Testing for Kindergarten?
Well, when you know, it's funny because I never came up with the seven abilities. I even when I started my business, you know, in 2001, where I was helping families in New York, I was helping parents get their kids ready for testing by showing them what I had done to get Sam ready, and they did really, really well. But when I wrote the book, I decided I'm going to try to get all this information out there that I know about how to get a child ready for testing. And so what I did was I started researching the most common intelligence tests that schools across the country were giving. And I realized that they were all these tests were assessing essentially the same abilities. And they might call them something different, and some of the tests might focus more on certain abilities over other abilities. But by and large, they were all covering the same seven abilities. And I thought, well, if all of these tests are assessing the same things, then obviously this is what educators and psychologists have decided that kids needed to have for school success. And so I've since verified that with educators and psychologists, and I feel really confident that the seven abilities are what every child needs to have when they enter school. And in fact, what's interesting, and I'll talk about the seven abilities in a little while, but you know, and I call it testing for kindergarten, but the seven abilities a child needs for kindergarten are the same abilities they're going to need all the way through school. So it's what they need, you know, as a five-year-old, they're going to need as a 12th grader. So it never changes, and in fact, if later, if your child is older and he's found to have a learning disability, it's going to be in one of these areas. And the only difference is if he has an ADD. I'm not really covering ADD or attention in the seven abilities, but what I found that was very interesting was that children with attention deficit who are diagnosed with deficits in attention, they almost always have one or two deficits in one of these abilities as well. So it tends to go hand in hand. So the seven abilities are not only for kindergarten, they're really for all the way through school.
Okay, great. And again, if you have questions for Karen, please go to our Facebook fan page and for Testing Mom and just post your questions there, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can at the end of the teleseminar. And I can personally vouch for Testing for Kindergarten, the book. It is great for any age student. It's a phenomenal book. So it's really helped my wife and I with our daughter who's going into second grade.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, I'll give you a little plug. All right, Karen, the next question here is what you alluded to. What exactly are the seven abilities? And everyone may need to get a pen and paper for this one. And can you explain why kids need each ability for testing and also for general school success?
Okay, we're going to go through each ability right now and why it is needed for school success. And the first one is language. The second is knowledge and comprehension. They kind of go hand in hand. The third is memory. The fourth is math. The fifth is visual spatial reasoning. The sixth is cognitive skills, and those are thinking skills. And the seventh is fine motor skills. So we'll start with just language, okay? When I talk about language, what I'm talking about here is expressive language and receptive language. Receptive language really involves kind of hearing. It's your child's ability to tune into and understand what they hear and later what they read all day. And expressive language is sort of like talking. It's your child's ability to use words orally and later through writing to express herself, you know, in a very clear and organized way. Now, why does this matter in a classroom? Well, think about, you know, receptive language in school. Language just pervades the classroom. Kids have to be able to listen, pay attention, and learn what the teacher's explaining. And, of course, they need receptive language to follow directions. And expressive language, which is the child communicating outwardly, a kid has to be able to answer questions, share ideas, and communicate to teachers and to other students. Now, knowledge and comprehension. What this is it's your child's ability to understand information they should have learned by a certain age. And let's say we're talking about a kindergartner. We'll be talking there about letters and numbers and colors. And it's also your child's ability to understand standards of behavior and common sense that kids his age usually understand. And that might be manners or how to handle themselves in different situations. Now, why does this matter in the classroom? Well, to get along in kindergarten, let's say, a child has to have certain basic information. They're going to be expected to understand what colors are, what shapes are, what seasons are, fruits, vegetables, certain things like that. And in fact, if you have a kindergartner, I kind of list everything that kids are expected to know by that age in testing for kindergarten. And kids are also expected to understand certain social norms by the time they start school. So if they knock over someone's blocks, they have to know that you stop and you apologize and you help pick them up. So it's both the social norms and it's the information that they're supposed to have by each particular age. Now, the third ability is memory. And what's I found very interesting when I was researching the book was that I learned that more memory is needed for school than at any other time in a person's life. What you've got to in terms of memory is long-term memory, and that's the ability to retrieve information that was learned in the past. And then there's short-term memory, the ability to retrieve information that was just given to you. And a very typical question on an IQ test will be, For a child, they might say, can you repeat these letters and numbers? And then they'll say, A, 7, L, 9, W, B. And the child just has to say, A, 7, L, 9, W, B. They have a good short-term memory. There's also something very important called short-term working memory. And that's something that kids need in school all the time. And that's the ability to retrieve information they were just given, hold on to it, and then do something with it. So instead of asking kids to repeat the letters and numbers they just heard, they might be asked, can you repeat the letters and numbers, but give me the letters first and the numbers last. So in that case, the answer would be ALWB79, letters first, numbers last. Well, why is this important in the classroom? Well, you know, I mean, so many things in school you have to have a good memory for. If a child reads a story, the teacher may ask questions about it. If a child is asked to solve a math problem, they have to remember the steps they've already completed while holding on to what they have to do next. If a child has a spelling test, she has to remember the order in which the letters go so that they can spell the word correctly. And then the next ability is mathematics. And within mathematics, there's kind of two kinds. There's computational skills, which are things like adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, that sort of thing. And then there's reasoning, math reasoning skills. And those are things like patterning, sequencing, ordering, classifying, and comparing. So why does this matter in the classroom? Well, I know you know that math is probably one of the most important subjects a child will learn from kindergarten through high school. There will always be math classes in their lives. And so starting with very young kids, you know, you want to make sure your child is getting the math abilities that he or she needs. Visual spatial reasoning. Now, this is one that people don't understand that well. And this is your child's ability to solve problems using pictures, images, diagrams, geometric shapes, maps, and tables. And it's also your child's ability to just organize an essay on a piece of paper or just organize his desk. And this is a hugely important skill because, think about it, you need visual spatial reasoning just to draw or recognize letters and numbers. You know, I remember when my kids were little and they were making such a big deal of the fact that your child needs to be able to draw circles and squares and triangles. And I kept thinking, why is that so important? Like, who cares, really? But the truth is that circles and squares and triangles are needed to draw letters. You know, you need to be able to draw a triangle to make a V or a circle to maybe to make a B. And the ability to notice visual detail is needed to distinguish like an E from a B. And with long division, children have to be able to line up numbers in order to solve problems. So, and of course, you need to recognize shapes for geometry and geography. And this is an interesting one, visual spatial reasoning, because my daughter, who's older now, but when she was young, was found to have a visual spatial learning disability. And what was, in my opinion, kind of tragic for me was that she was tested when she was 4. She was given the WPSI IQ test. And on that test, she just did terribly on every subtest that tested visual spatial reasoning. Her overall score was okay, and it got her into a good school. So I was very happy, and I didn't focus at all on the fact that, hey, in these 2 subtests, she did terrible. And had I understood just a little bit at that time, you know, what a visual spatial reasoning deficit was and could do to a child going through school, you know, I would have noticed when she started having trouble as she went through school. And I would have said, hey, I wonder if that test where she did so badly in those areas might be related to why she's struggling in math. And in fact, it wasn't until she was in 6th grade that she was diagnosed. And so by then, you know, she was really so far behind. And I just feel so bad that I did not understand when my daughter was young how important visual spatial skills were. And the fact that a test, you know, where low scores show up in a particular area, it doesn't mean they're going to have a learning deficit necessarily, but it's a red flag and it's something a parent needs to look out for if you see it. The next skill is your cognitive skills, and those are really your thinking skills. Those are the brain functions that make it possible to know. These are things like analyzing, reasoning, learning, awareness, and judgment. And, you know, it's so important in the classroom. I mean, thinking is fundamental to everything you do in school, really to all intellectual endeavors. And in the book, Testing for Kindergarten, I do break down all the different kinds of thinking skills, and I talk about why they matter in school. But I'll just give you one example of a type of thinking skill that's important, and that's just abstract thinking. And, you know, you look at a little 5-year-old who learns that 4 cookies can be represented by the number 4. Well, that is abstract reasoning. You know, a 4 is not 4 cookies, but it can mean 4 cookies. And later, children have to master things like abstract language, that words that represent something that you can't see or touch, but you can understand, words like irony or democracy or joy. Those are all words that require abstract reasoning to understand. And finally, the last ability is fine motor skills. And this is your child's ability to control their hands and their fingers. And these are the abilities needed for cutting, for playing an instrument, folding, tying shoelaces. And interestingly, graphomotor skills, those are the skills, the ability to use your hands and fingers to write with a pencil, are kind of a subset of this, but they're different. And you can have a child who has really a problem with graphomotor skills but can do some of the other things, you know, with their fingers, like tie their shoelaces or play an instrument. And, of course, fine motor skills are so important in the classroom because in school children need to write papers, they need to type, they need to work with manipulatives. And, in fact, 60 to 70% of schoolwork requires fine motor skills. So that's why that'll just give you a sense of what these abilities are and, you know, and then why they matter so much in the classroom.
Okay, great. And again, each of these abilities are thoroughly outlined and in-depth in Karen's book, Testing for Kindergarten. And we're also going to have a special promotion at the end of the teleseminar tonight to let you know how you can get Karen's book, Testing for Kindergarten, absolutely free. Karen, the next question here, on each of the seven abilities, if you could run through those abilities quickly again and give us two or three tips on how parents might help their child build each of these abilities.
Okay, I will. I'll be happy to. You know, I'll talk about younger kids, and I know some of you have older kids as well. So we can also just remember that if I talk about younger children, and ideas for younger children, with an older child, you still, let's say language, for example, you know, what you do with a younger child, a lot of it is really the same with what you do with an older child, but it just might be at a higher level. So, for example, we'll start with language. And what I say about language is that what you want to do is you want to talk to your child about everything and anything. And I always tell a story. I remember when I was living in New York when my children were really young, and we lived in this big building, and there was another woman who had a baby at the same time that I did, and our kids were kind of growing up at the same time, and I used to see her, and this woman would talk to her child constantly. And I mean, they'd be walking down the hall, and she'd be saying, "We're walking down the hall now," and they'd get into the elevator, and she'd start talking about, "Look at the numbers on the elevator. 1, 2, 3, 4, can you press 4? I mean, she never stopped talking, and I found it very annoying and just thought, well, God, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't talk to my child like that all the time. Well, later, her little boy got into this school in New York called Hunter College Elementary, which only takes kids who, you know, who score in the top 1%, you know, 99.9% to get into the school. So talking to this child all the time really paid off with her. And so, in fact, there's a lot of research on this, that children who were brought up in high-language households where there's just a lot of language around them, whether it's through talking or reading, that kind of thing, these kids have IQ scores that are 38 points higher than children brought up in low-language households. So whoever is taking care of your child, whether it's you, whether you have a caregiver, you just want them to be talking to your child all the time. And not just talking at them, you want it to be back and forth conversation. You know, with a baby, even as a little baby, even if they can't talk back to you, you notice what catches their eye, and you point to that and react to that. And you just try to make it as conversational as you can. And you want to use rich language, not baby talk, with your kids. And of course, as they get older, you use bigger words and you know, richer language. And children learn language really by absorption. So if they are surrounded by language, that's how they learn it. So you want to be in a family where there's just talking at dinner, talking when you're going out, that kind of thing. And, of course, you want to read to your child all the time. And when you read to your child, you use active reading techniques. And what this means is that instead of just reading the words, you know, as you're reading every few pages, you involve your child in the book. So, you know, if maybe your child points to something that interests him, you know, you react to that and say, "Yes, that's a red fire engine. Where, you know, who drives a fire engine?" And so you ask him questions about the illustrations, or you might ask him to predict what he thinks would happen next, or you try to ask him to connect something that you're reading about to something in his life. So, you know, reading, of course, you always hear reading to your child is so important. And even when they're older and they can read themselves, you can read books to them that are harder than books that they could, you know, manage on their own. You know, read books that have very rich language and imagery. And that's how they learn vocabulary words and that sort of thing. So, you know, you might be reading to them The Wizard of Oz or even a Harry Potter book if you feel they're ready, but they can't read it themselves, but you can read it to them. And they get a lot out of it. So those are some ways to really build your child's language skills. Knowledge and comprehension. Two things I recommend. If you have a young child, I recommend that you get a concept book like Richard Scarry's Best First Word Book, or there's also DK Publishing has My First Word Book Ever. And these are great because they're like crib sheets on what a child is expected to know on an IQ test and what a child is expected to know by the time they start school. So for parents of very young kids, I really recommend you get those books because they're fabulous. And if your kids are, and even for young kids and for older kids, for knowledge and comprehension, a wonderful tool is Brain Quest cards. And I know you've seen those. You know, they've got questions. Kids love to do them. They're so much fun. And they have them on subject matter. They have them by grade. And it makes it feel like a game, but they're learning a lot of information. And, of course, you know, beyond just these tools, if you're talking to your child all the time, like we talked about before, you're explaining things to them. So they're getting some comprehension. They're getting knowledge as you're walking around. And if you go places and visit the zoo and visit the beach and do a lot of experiential things, you can then talk about it, you know, afterwards. And they get a lot of knowledge just by experience, which is the best way, of course, for kids to learn things. And then there's memory. There are so many memory games that you can play with kids, and I do list a lot of them in the book, but one for really young kids is a game called Silly Sally, and this is one my kids used to love, and you come up with these crazy, you know, things like Silly Sally was so silly, you know, she washed her face with chocolate pudding, and then she ate soap for dessert. Well, what's silly about that? And your child is just laughing and thinks that's so funny. Well, of course, they have to remember, well, what is the right use for chocolate pudding? And what is the correct use for soap in order to know what is wrong with the sentence? And so Silly Sally, or you can call it Silly Sammy if you want it to be a boy, and you come up with these just crazy scenarios, and the kids have to tell you what's wrong. And they love doing it, and it really requires their long-term memory. Another fun thing to do with kids, really of many ages, is just creating patterns with shells and coins and Fruit Loops and other manipulatives. And you can create a pattern and then mess it up and then have your child recreate it. And this builds visual memory. And, of course, kids love to do patterning anyway, so especially like with that you can do stickers and that kind of thing, just doing patterning, which is kind of builds a math skill as well. But when you do the kind where you mess up the pattern and your child has to recreate it, that really taxes their memory skills. And then another thing is, you know, you can do a silly game where you just open a book up to a page at random and you pick, you know, you circle your finger around and you pick a sentence and you make a big deal about finding this random sentence, and then you read it to your child and see if they can repeat it back to you exactly as you said it. You know, many, many tests have activities like this, and it's because they're testing short-term memory. And you can play that as a game like, you know, I don't know if you remember, was it Postman, where you whisper a sentence and then the person has to repeat it? So that's similar kind of thing, but you just want to know, can a child hear something and then within a few seconds remember it? And then, of course, there's math, and that's another very important skill. And with math, you know, children learn math exactly the same way they learn language. They absorb it. So if you have a young child, from the time your child is very young and you're talking to your child about everything and anything the way we talked about before, you always want to include math in the conversation. So you want to be a counter. You know, like when you give your child like a little snack, like three little, you know, here's three goldfish. One, two, three. Do you want more? How about three more? Okay, four, five, six. Let's count them out. One, two, three, four, five, six. So you're always counting things, and that just becomes absorbed in them and part of the scenery, and they start to know how to count things. You know, when you're walking around in the city or wherever you are, you want to talk about which building is bigger, which building is smaller. You know, you want to point out things in the environment that are shaped like, that have different shapes, that kind of thing. So that's another thing to do for math. And then there's all these books you can read with young kids. Certainly there's Eric Carle's 1, 2, 3 to the Zoo or 10 Little Rubber Ducks. There's lots of books that you can read that build math skills. You know, so you just, again, you just want to build that into your child's environment as much as you can. And cooking is great for building math skills as well. And then with visual spatial reasoning, when we have young children, you want to have puzzles in your house for your child to do. And, of course, they can start out really simple, and then as your children get older, you can have harder puzzles for them to do. Puzzles are fantastic. And if your child resists puzzles, because some kids really don't like them, especially if they're hard for them to do, what you want to do is get puzzles that have your child's favorite characters on them, whichever their favorite characters are, or if they happen to be kids who love, you know, transportation, or kids who love dinosaurs or princesses, whatever they love, get puzzles that have that, and they'll want to do them. And then parquetry blocks. I don't know if you know what those are. They're called parquetry blocks, P-A-R-Q-U-E-T-R-Y. And what these are is they're blocks with different shapes and different colors. And what you can do is you make these beautiful designs with them. And you can make, when you know, with young kids, you make very simple designs, and then you have your child copy the design. With older kids, you make a more complex design, and you see if they can copy them. And then the other thing you can do is have your child make a, you know, make the design, and you copy what your child does. And then what you want to do is make a mistake sometimes and see if they catch your mistake, because that means they're noticing the detail, okay? So that's a really good way to build the spatial, visual spatial reasoning skills. And with cognitive skills, thinking skills, what you want to do is you don't want to solve problems for your kids. Even when they're really little, you know, and as much as you can, you want to get them to help you solve problems. So, you know, if a ball falls way under the couch and you can't reach it, ask him. Don't go in there and reach it yourself, but say, how do you think we might get that ball out from under the couch? What could we do? How, you know, could we use something to help us get it? You know, let him help you solve problems. And, of course, when you have a problem and you're solving it, solve it out loud so your child can see how you're solving problems and kind of see the thinking process you're going through. And the most important thing you can do to build thinking skills and cognitive skills is giving your child as much time as possible for free play. It is through, you know, play that children learn to think. They make decisions. They negotiate. They are creative. They problem solve. I mean, it's just the best thing you can let your child do. And you just want to have lots of open-ended material in your house that your child can work with. And when I say open-ended material, all I mean by that is just materials that can be used in many different ways versus toys that are supposed to be used a very specific way. So that would be things like dolls or art materials or Legos or Duplo, Lincoln Logs, things like that where they can build and create and do it with someone else as well and you know, negotiate and decide on and plan what they're going to do. These all build thinking skills. And then there finally is fine motor skills. And the best thing you can do is just have in your house paper, pencils, crayons, scissors, and art materials that your child can use when they want to make something. And if you have a four-year-old who is clenching his crayon in his fist, then what you want to do is at that point break the crayons in half, and that forces them to hold the crayon with their fingers. And that's kind of the correct way to start holding a pencil or a crayon, and some kids really resist that. So if you have a child resisting, you know, that's a really good thing to do, is just break the crayons in half. And, you know, in the book Testing for Kindergarten, I give lots and lots of games and activities that you can do at home to build each of these seven abilities. And some of the games that I have for little kids, even children who are 8, 9, and 10 really love to play the same games. They can just play them a lot better, like a memory game, you know, what's in Grandma's trunk. There's a car in Grandma's trunk, and then the next person has to say, there's a car in Grandma's trunk, and there's also a plant in Grandma's trunk. There's a car and a plant in Grandma's trunk, and then they have to remember until somebody forgets. Well, you can play that with a little young 5-year-old, and you can play that with a 10-year-old, and they seem to like it as much as the little ones. They just can play it much better. And the thing that I like to say about the seven abilities is that if you can get your arms around what they are, just kind of know what they are, it's kind of like the five food groups. You know what they are, so you know what you're supposed to feed your family. And with the seven abilities, if you know what they are, you just try to do one thing a day to strengthen each ability a little bit at a time. So those are the seven abilities and the kinds of things that you can do at home to build them.
Okay, great. Yes, and again, all those are covered in Karen's book, Testing for Kindergarten, and we're going to tell you how you can get that book for free at the end of our teleseminar tonight, so stay tuned.
And I just want to add, let me just a really quick answer to a question, which is someone asked what the two concept books were that I suggested, and I just want to tell you again, just really quickly, what the concept books. Richard Scarry's Best First Book Word Book is one, and the other is DK Publishing's My First Word Book Ever. But when I say concept books, it's what I'm talking about is one of those books that has a little bit of everything in it, and you know you've seen them, like alphabet book. It has the alphabet, it has opposites, it has everything in the kitchen, everything that's transportation, everything you eat, all the fruits, the vegetables. It kind of has everything all organized. And Richard Scarry does a great job, and so does DK Publishing, and I'm sure there's others. I'm sure there's Sesame Street and that kind of thing as well.
Okay, great. And again, if you have any questions, please go to our Facebook fan page, Testing Mom, and we're getting a ton of questions on our Facebook fan page, Karen, and we'll get to those, in as many as we can, in just a minute.
Right, and if we don't finish them, we'll answer them after.
Yeah, we'll make sure we answer them. And if you have questions, please go out to Facebook and we'll get to those questions as we can during the teleseminar or after the teleseminar if we can't address your particular question. Karen, the next question here is specifically about testing, which is definitely your expertise. So if a child will be tested for a gifted and talented program or to get into private school, will they be given a test that assesses for the seven abilities, or will it be a different type of test?
Okay. Well, when children, young children especially, are tested, but, you know, even in the elementary years, there's really two types of tests that they're going to be given for admissions. Many schools give what is called an intelligence test, or it's like an IQ test, and that would be something like the WPSI-3. It's a Wechsler test, and they all go by these initials, and, you know, the WPPSI-3. But it's called the WPSI-3. And then, of course, you've heard of the Stanford-Binet, and Woodcock-Johnson also has an intelligence test. And these tests primarily assess whether or not a child has the seven abilities that we've been talking about. That's what they are measuring. And intelligence tests will ask questions in different ways. But common questions on these types of tests would be things like vocabulary-type questions, patterning questions, matrix questions. And a patterning question will be something like a child will see 4 or 5 squares where there might be shapes that make up a pattern, and they just need to choose, well, what's the next shape that completes the pattern? And a matrix question, what that is you'll see a box, and there might be, it's divided into 4 squares and 2 pictures on top, you know, a hat and a head. And then on the bottom left, there might be a glove. And a child is asked, you know, a hat goes with a head the way a glove goes with what? And the child can pick, you know, a hand, a foot, a knee, or an ear. So a hat goes with a head the way a glove goes with a hand. So those are the kinds of things on intelligence tests. And, in fact, in a minute, Michael's going to tell you how to get 50 free practice questions from us. And the practice questions we have are very typical of what you're going to see on this type of a test. Children are also given achievement tests. That's the other kind. And this is going to assess the content of what a child may have learned so far. It might be reading, writing, letters, numbers, math, science, history, geography, that sort of thing. Really young kids are just going to maybe test it on colors and numbers and letters and you know, do they know up and down and some relativity terms. But as they get older, you know, it starts to be, you know, addition, subtraction, geography, that kind of thing. And for gifted programs, school districts tend to choose one or two tests, and they tend to be given throughout the whole district. So in New York City, this is just, I'm going to give a couple of examples. They give two tests. They give the OLSAT, and then they give something called the BSRA or the Bracken test to get into a gifted and talented program. And the OLSAT, though it's not an IQ test, it's very much like an intelligence test. It's got reasoning. It's got, you know, it feels like an intelligence test. But the Bracken, the other test, covers more of achievement kinds of things like colors, numbers, shapes, that kind of thing. And in Chicago, which is another market where they test for gifted and talented, they don't tell you the name of the test they give, but we know that it's something very similar to the OLSAT. Plus, they give what's called a classical test, which is an achievement test. So this is actually very common for schools that are evaluating for gifted and talented. They will give both an intelligence and an achievement test. Every district has different tests. There's so many different tests. But what you find is there just is a lot of overlap between the many tests that are out there that schools will use. And if your child is just going to be evaluated for a program, like whether they should be in the advanced, average, or slow reading group, then of course they'll get like a reading test, that kind of thing.
Okay, great. And we'll wrap it up with this final question, Karen, then mm-hmm. we'll take some Facebook questions, and then we'll tell everyone about our special offer tonight. The last question here is, if a parent knows their child will be tested, how can we help them prepare without stressing them out? And I'm assuming they're talking about the kids, not the parents. So.
Or everybody.
Or everyone. Everyone gets really stressed out, especially in New York City. So.
It can be all over, I think. Well, one thing I want to say is if you're going to have your child tested because you suspect a learning disability or an issue, maybe they're having some kind of learning issue where you really want them to get extra help at school, you know, I don't think you want to go in and do a lot of preparation. I think you want to get a real, you know, you really want to just let your child go in and be tested and see where they are. If you're in a situation where an admissions decision is going to be made based on the test your child takes, in that case, obviously you want them to do as well as possible. And, you know, I would never recommend sending a little child in for a test without doing at least some kind of practice with the kinds of questions they're going to be asked. And the reason is that these questions are very different from anything a child has ever done. I mean, kids do not normally answer matrix questions or analogy questions. And, for example, vocabulary questions on IQ tests for child programs. And right now we have over 5,500 practice questions for 8 very child might get. And we're always adding more tests and we're always adding more questions. Now, ideally, if your child is going to be tested, you will know the name of the test that your child is going to take. And if we have the practice questions, you know, for that test for your child's age, then you can just go in and do those practice questions. If your child is taking a different test from what we have up, you can always email us and let us know how old is your child, what test are they taking. And we can tell you if we have practice questions that are similar that you can use. Because like I said, there is so much overlap between these tests. You know, one test that we have up might be very helpful for another test that we don't have up specifically. So, and if we don't have the right practice questions that would help your child, we will always tell you that. And in preparing, what you want to do is, especially if you have a young child, you know, a test can take up to an hour. So what you want to do is you want to help your child work her way up to being able to focus on doing these test-like questions for up to an hour. So at the beginning, you know, if you have a four-year-old, they might have a five-minute attention span for this kind of thing. So you just do 5 minutes of practice questions for several days in a row, and then the next, you know, day you maybe try 10 minutes, and then the next week you go to 15. So you build up till your child has what we call test stamina. And you want to make it fun. I mean, that's the most important thing. And at Testing Mom, what we do is we give you brightly colored stickers to reward kids for effort. And our questions can be done online or they can be printed out and done with pencil and paper. We also sell a game called IQ Fun Park that gets kids ready for testing through the game, which has space babies and stickers and temporary tattoos. And we sell workbooks from Aristotle Circle, which we think that's our favorite workbook company that does test prep of all the workbook companies, because we think their material is both good and it's fun for kids. So the most important thing in doing test prep is just keep it fun. And the other thing is that, you know, once you see the types of questions that are on these tests, then you realize what you can do outside of test practice, you know, to get your child aware of the kinds of information that's on these tests. So, you know, if you see, like, on a certain test that they're going to ask all these relativity questions, like what's taller, what's shorter, what's got more, what's got less, then you just build that into your life. When you're walking, you know, you're making dinner and you say, which bowl has more? Or who's taller in our family, you know, Billy or Johnny? So once you know what's on the test, then you know how to bring it into your life, which is, of course, always the best way, I think, to get a child ready.
So hey, Karen, we have time for probably one, maybe two Facebook questions. I'm going to ask this Facebook question because this is actually we were speaking about it earlier today, Karen. This is
okay.
One of we get this question weekly or more than once a week usually. We speak Spanish in our home or speak a second language other than English in our home. Do you think my children's language ability may be affected with testing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you have a child who's speaking Spanish at home and maybe English at school, so they're speaking more than one language, what you want to do if you're going to have them tested with an IQ test, you want to make sure you tell the tester this is a child who is bilingual, because, you know, that's going to affect their language scores. Usually kids who speak more than one language, they often don't do as well in the language area just because they've got, you know, multiple languages. It doesn't mean they're not as smart. It's just that they're processing many languages at one time. So you definitely want to tell the tester, and you want it put in the report. In some situations, you can't do that. Like, for example, in New York City, you know, you actually have a choice. They'll actually let you get your child, I think, tested in, like, up to 13 different languages. So if your child is better in Spanish, you can choose to get your child tested in Spanish. And so, you know, there's nowhere to say, but we also speak English at home, you know. So you just pick the best language and you go with it. If you're in a situation, though, let's say where you're in you're speaking multiple languages at home and you know your child's going to be tested in English because that's just the way it's going to be where you are, what you might think about doing is in the months leading up to the test, speak more English around your child at home. And I know I think it's great to be bilingual, and it's wonderful and very important. But you just want your child to be as strong in the language in which they're going to be tested as possible, because you don't want it to get held against him if he doesn't do as well. So that's just if you only have one choice of the language and it's English. But otherwise, you know, if you can, you always want it put in the report. And like I said, private schools will definitely consider the fact that kids are bilingual, and they may not have done as well in language, but they'll give them extra points because, wow, it's because the child is bilingual, and that's a good thing. So that's what you kind of have to do with that. It's a plus and it's a minus with testing. It can work both ways depending on where you are and whether or not they'll consider whether or not the child is bilingual.
Okay, Karen, it looks like we're about out of time for all the questions, but if you have specific questions, we have so many questions on our Facebook fan page, and we will get to those Karen, we'll get to those later tonight after our teleseminar. So, Karen, you're going to be very busy in case you haven't looked at our Facebook fan page.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all the questions on Facebook, and we will definitely answer them. There's a lot of good ones, so I promise we'll get to them, and the answers will all be up there. So, by tomorrow.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely by tomorrow. So I want to tell you about the special offers we have tonight for people who attended our teleseminar. So, again, we want to thank Amy for introducing us to her members, and we really appreciate you all taking the time out of your busy schedule. And what we're offering people tonight on the teleseminar, first of all, you can get 50 free practice questions, and these practice questions are good for pre-K through 6th grade. And this will give you an idea of the different types of questions that are asked on a variety of tests. So all you need to do is go to testingmom.com, and on the homepage, you can't miss it, it says sign up here to get your free 50 free practice questions. Sign up there, and then as soon as you sign up, you will land on the next page where you can view all the practice questions, when you can get your child and to see how they respond to each of these questions. And it's absolutely free. And we have memberships on testingmom.com as well. And what we're going to be offering tonight is we have different levels of membership. We have a top 1% membership. And as a very special offer tonight, we're actually going to be, and we've never done this before, we're actually going to offer 50% off our top 1% membership. And our top 1% membership, when you get to the payment page, after you get your 50 questions, is option number 2. And the top 1% membership includes a monthly private phone consultation with either Karen or myself, if you have specific gifted and talented testing questions, I would be more than happy to help you out as well. Or Karen is the testing authority in all areas, and she can help you out. And that also includes, you'll also receive Karen's best-selling The Ivy Chronicles, and also her book that she spoke about tonight, Testing for Kindergarten, and also Pattern Tiles, the Testing Mom Pattern Tiles we just launched, I guess probably a little less than 2 months ago. Karen, do you want to explain the Pattern Tiles to everyone?
Those are very typical. They're similar to the kinds of things that a child might get in an IQ test, and they're special tiles, and you can make patterns with them, and we have a book with lots of pattern examples that you could make with these tiles, and then you want your child to copy them. And they're similar to something on the WIPSI and on the Sanford-Binet, and they're really great for building visual spatial skills.
Okay, great. And also you'll receive $100 off Karen's IQ Fun Park, and it's an amazing activity game that you and your child can play, and it really combines all the four major tests that a child will be exposed to for gifted and talented, and also IQ testing and private school admissions. Now, the promo code, you're going to need a promo code to get this 50% off, so please have a pen ready. The promo code for 50% off our top 1% membership is HARVARD50. Harvard is in the university, 50. HARVARD, the number 5 and the number 0. You'll just put that into the coupon code box at the bottom, and it'll apply 50% off our top 1% membership. Now, we also have our top 5% membership, and what we're offering tonight for anyone on the teleseminar is 25% off our top 5% membership. And this membership includes Karen's book, Testing for Kindergarten, absolutely free, and you'll get that mailed within a few days after you sign up for our top 5% membership. And the code that you need for the 25% off our top 5% membership, which is option 3 on the payment page, is Yale, as in the university, Y-A-L-E, 2525, Yale 25. And our last promotion that we're offering tonight for everyone attending the teleseminar, Karen mentioned throughout the Aristotle workbooks. We've recently partnered with Aristotle. We have a store on testingmom.com, so it's on the far upper left link of the home, or far upper left of the homepage of testingmom.com. Just click on the store, and you'll see all of the Aristotle workbook materials there. And you can order those through Testing Mom, and we will fulfill those for you. And we're having a special promotion for Aristotle Circle workbooks, and you can receive 25% off any Aristotle workbook that you order. And all these specials are for a limited time only for the next 48 hours. So make sure you act by Thursday night, because these coupon codes will expire. And the coupon code that you'll need for the workbooks, the coupon code is CIRCLE25, CIRCLE25. So again, for the top 1% membership, for 50% off, it's HARVARD50. For 25% off, for our top 5% members, it's Yale25. And to get 25% off any Aristotle workbook that we sell in our store on testbmom.com, the promo code or the coupon code is CIRCLE25. Now, Karen, did you have any final words as we close?
No, I wish I could have been able to talk to people as we were doing this. We had so much to cover, and I just invite everybody, if you have more questions that we didn't get to, please go ahead and post them on our Facebook site, and we will answer them. We definitely will answer them by tomorrow. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Karen, thank you, Michael, everyone, for attending. Yes, hi, Amy.
Oh, this is Amy McCready again. First, Karen and Michael, I want to thank you guys so much. It makes me sick that my boys are as old as they are now, and I didn't know this when they were younger. This is such good information. And for those of you who are on the call, I want you to know that the reason that I invited Karen and Michael to share all this information with you is just because I believe in what they do. I don't have any financial arrangement with them at all. I bring this to you because I believe in what they do, and I think they do it so well. So I really encourage you to check out those promotions that they talked about. The three coupon codes were HARVARD50, Yale25, and CIRCLE25. So check that out. The other thing is, if you are not already a fan of their Facebook page, run, don't walk, and become a fan of their page, because every day Karen or Michael put, you know, different questions or ideas that you can be asking your kids so you can build these skills into your everyday life with them. And I think that is a huge value as well. So, Karen and Michael, thank you so much for being with the Positive Parenting Solutions fans and customers tonight. It's been great, awesome information, and I hope everybody takes advantage of your wonderful services.
Thanks for having us. It was really great.
Yeah,
thanks everybody.
Amy.
Have a fabulous night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.